This piece was brought to you by Roberta's, robertaspizza.com.
I'm Mike Colomeco from Food Talk. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Oh, that music is the equivalent of the free 7-Eleven espresso shot that I discovered that you can get in the condiment section of 7-Eleven. It doesn't cost money. You're only allowed two a day. You have to add it to your coffee, I guess. But I thought it was odd. Why not spend the $1.19 on the coffee? Just do the shot. Anyway, it is eating disorder on Monday night at Roberta's on a beautiful summery eve. My name is Crazy Legs Conti. I'm joined by the wonderful host... Across from me, the Reverend.
Oh, you're winking at me.
I am winking at you. I know you bought a meat plate and some salad.
Yep.
You must be doing well with this new job that you're spending. I bought pretzel strips.
I'm loving it. I'm working clean plates. It's a very non-pretentious healthy eating site. And a newsletter. It's not about not eating meat or not eating or eating vegetables or whatever. It's just about. Enjoy your lifestyle, eat more, eat less, move more, that kind of thing.
Yeah, clearly, because everyone turned down the pretzel sticks I brought. So we have a wonderful guest who's going to help me out. I can tell you've been working. That's what your week's about. But I have to bring this up. I know we were going to talk about my weekend in New Orleans.
Absolutely.
And just the great music I saw, but... Mm-hmm. New York has no more OTBs. Did you know that?
Yes, absolutely.
But there's still three listed on the New York racing site.
And you can still bet if in this neighborhood.
Nope.
No.
Well,
if you go over.
In this neighborhood,
this completely. No, Williamsburg. If it's completely off the record.
Yeah. Why didn't you tell me you knew a bookie?
Well, no, you just have to go to the turkey's nest and talk to the right people.
So what happened to me was, financially, it's been a rough go. So I went to TD Bank. Shout out to the bank. They have those...
they have a bookie at TD Bank?
No, they have they have the coin dolly, I think it's called. You bring all your change. And I got a Bustelo espresso can.
You got the Coinstar.
Yeah. And normally they charge 8%, but if you make a donation to the Special Olympics...
Hedge funds don't charge 8%.
I know. Listen, I got to get the paper, roll it, bring it to the bank. Like, that takes time. So... I dumped all my change. I gave to the Special Olympics, so they waived the 8% fee.
Okay.
They gave me a little green bracelet, free pen. And I'm like, all right, now I can't take the subway because I don't want to spend on the MetroCard. I'm going to walk to the Winner's Circle, 38th and 7th. I'm going to walk down to Wall Street to the Skippers. None of the places exist because I had, I don't know if you've seen Laying Low, Danny Liner's film, but right. That's like back when Piven had real hair and Kevin Corrigan. And I'm like, I'm going to hit the trifecta. It's going to be the triple crown.
Really?
Because I had a system, and I was like, I know American Pharoah is going to take it. I like Frosted as the spoiler, but that's second place. And then always bet on the New Orleans jockey,
right.
Ken Dordisman, Ryan Keen Ice. So I'm trying to find an OTB. I'm trying to find a bookie. I find nothing. So on Twitter, 10 minutes before the Belmont Stakes, the final leg of the triple crown, not... done in 37 years, I just said, look, this is going to be the trifecta, and here's a photo of me, and it's 10 minutes before the race, and I hit. So I hit on Twitter, which is no money. and at first I wasn't so... I was bothered that there was the Burger King guy behind Bob Baffert. I thought, why would you just... Product placement of fast food that's so cringeworthy.
I mean, what about Monster? Monster was all over
the
thing.
Monster paid the horse, as did Wheels Up on his legs.
Monster injected the horse.
I know.
The jockey was like, yeah, I had some Monster.
Burger King guy behind the... And then I realized on my way back from the bank, once every 6 months, I go on a fast food binge. I had a Whopper Jr. hanging out of my mouth in the photo on Twitter.
And it's still on your beard right now.
I got it trimmed today for a job interview at court appearance. So I couldn't believe it. I was like, oh, but the trifecta, according to the board, only paid $13.50. So I didn't feel that bad because had I gone, which I should have done in my hungover state, $15 admission, I probably would have bet $20. So I was looking at at the most $130.
Yeah.
But today I was told the trifecta actually paid $54.50 on a $1 bet.
Wow.
So, but I have decided...
That would have given you a car service home from here.
I have decided to turn that... into something that is lucrative.
Yeah.
And I think it's a movie. And it's a Disney movie. Uh-huh. It's called Triple Frown. And our guest is going to help me out with the plot because she's both done nonfiction and fiction. And it, I know, now I'm a 6'3 guy with dreads, long beard, although I got it trimmed today for court appearance and job interview. Yeah. I thought it was Russian beard, but the guy said, no, it's Swedish from the Swedish-Norway War. Mm. So I was thinking Johnny Depp, he can rock the dreads, or Jake Gyllenhaal. I've been watching a lot of Gyllenhaal, but I think those guys aren't available.
Yeah.
So playing me, I'm willing to go David Schwimmer or Stephen Baldwin.
David Schwimmer has a face like a can full of asses.
And that's not too far from my own. And it's called Triple Frown, and the basis is it's three races, betting on American Pharoah. Something goes wrong, lose the money, lose the ticket. Instead of like the Blues Brothers scenario for the orphanage, we're going to do it for the New York Public Library. Look, so at the end, the two lions are joined by American Pharoah statue.
Yeah, but I got to be the fly in the ointment.
What do you mean? You don't like that pitch?
No,
it's Inside Llewyn Davis meets Secretariat.
Okay,
it's a winner.
Why did I hate Inside Llewyn Davis? Because of the fucking cat.
All right.
Okay, so
this is a horse. This is much bigger than a cat.
It's even worse. I mean, I was a horse guy. I was a dog guy until I realized thousands of horses die every year at the freaking track. This year I watched it because it was at my parents' house and it was my dad's memorial and my dad liked the track and I watched
all
it.
Right.
But I can't support it anymore. I'm just like, you know, it's
Have you ever eaten horse?
I've eaten camel.
If they shut down all the OTBs, I've eaten horse. It's absolutely delicious.
Yeah.
Legalize it only at New York Racing Association OTBs.
I just can't do it. It'd be one thing if it was an animal that you ate and blah blah blah.
Let's go and introduce our guest.
Yes.
And she's going to help me out with this Disney film. Triple Frown is the working title. Janice Erlbaum is joining us. Now, she is a writer of extraordinary means because she goes both sides of the aisle.
Yep, she's written
nonfiction and fiction.
Well, her first couple of books were Girl Bomb, a halfway homeless memoir.
Right, and then Have You Found Her, which is also a memoir.
A memoir.
And then I think it was maybe not this week, but this month, Liar is her first novel.
Mm-hmm.
The first two are on Random House. The second, the novel coming out is on Falk. Something.
Thought Catalog Books.
Thought Catalog Books.
Hi.
That wasn't a swear.
Me.
Welcome, Janice.
Thank you so much. Thanks
and,
for having me.
And I think those two companies would be, well, you know, we're going to have to get into movie rights, but let's talk a little bit about, right off the bat, do you feel like, I already forgot the working title, do you feel like Triple Frown Disney film has potential, and what do you think of Schwimmer or Stephen Baldwin?
You know,
as me,
I think it's got great potential, but I think you need to skew a lot younger.
Ooh, you like the person younger, like Lautner, the guy from the vampire movies?
Okay, or Lautner, the guy from the vampire movies.
So you're saying I should be played by a younger version of myself?
Still
down on the outs, having to go to the coin machine at the bank with your couch change.
Yeah, well,
it could happen.
It could definitely happen.
All right.
To one of these bedheaded, cute Disney stars that they already have in their Disney stable. Speaking of eating horses,
all right.
Well, yes. Have you ever eaten a Disney teen star?
That's a premium
and
price.
You know, I have a thing about cannibalism. I really do.
We've been trying to have
the cannibalism show forever, and no one lets me do it.
Freshman 2, Broderick is back. Obviously, no Brando. Yeah. It involves eating a teen Disney star. I think that's
that would be
if
amazing.
We could do a double feature with Triple Frown, I'm in. So what do you have some Disney thoughts before we get to your actual writing? But
yeah, sure.
You think Triple Frown?
I think it's a go.
It's a go.
I think it's a go.
All right, Fork U Radio is our Twitter handle. Mm-hmm. So hit us up with plot points or casting or whatnot. Gina Gershon as the love interest. I'm just putting that out.
Really?
Or Katy Perry. I'll take one of the other. Or both.
Really?
Could be a love triangle.
Really?
Yes.
Or
really?
Just them in love with each other.
Oh, yes. Done. I don't even need to be in the movie if that's the story. All right. Janice, tell us a little bit about your writing process, because the books, which I will get from the library, as I often do, the New York Public Library, shout out to the Oddendorfer branch.
I can lend them to you because I've actually bought them.
All right. See? Now, you, the first two are nonfiction.
Yes.
And you had, what would you call it, a troublesome youth, or was it a difficult youth?
Yes,
and
both
give
of
us
those.
Sort of, and that's the basis for the writing, I guess.
Yes. The first memoir was based on my experiences as a quote-unquote halfway homeless teen. I ran away when I was 15 years old, and I lived in a shelter here in Hell's Kitchen.
What years were this, roughly?
1985.
So this is not today's Hell's Kitchen.
No, it is not.
You weren't getting getting tapas leftovers.
No,
on 48th Street.
This
is 1985. Hell's Kitchen is basically the equivalent of saying, I don't even like. Basically saying, like, the Westies killed a lot of people. Like, it was body counts and things.
It was a rough neighborhood.
Very rough.
Yeah. Yes, you didn't go over to 10th Avenue.
If Union Square was rough in 1985, you can imagine what Hell's Kitchen was like. So you're a teen at a shelter in 1985 in Hell's Kitchen.
Yep. I was going to public school here in Chelsea and just sort of trying to find a home for myself, both physically and spiritually and emotionally, and so that's really what the first book covers, those crazy teenage years. And then the second one is called Have You Found Her, and it's about going back to the same shelter where I'd lived, and this time volunteering. While I was there, I met a young woman, just an extraordinary young woman, who had a terrible life story, and I became very, very enmeshed with her. Her health was terrible. I was going to be her savior. I was going to be her guardian. And then it turned out that she was not who she had purported to be.
Okay.
So when that happened, I'd spent a year of my life with this person, really intimately involved. When I found out that she had been lying about everything, I was like, oh, this is great. I'll write a book about it. Hooray! Yes.
Because identity works in many ways. Obviously, in your life, finding yourself, finding a home, not being displaced, which is a big problem with homeless populations, because mental health is perhaps linked to feeling like you belong somewhere. And then, obviously, the fictitious creation of an identity that was not her own, as maybe her safeguard or cloud. But I haven't read it. I'm going to read it. I don't know. I'm reminded of a few, like a New York author I read when I moved here, like Jim Carroll, a teen, a wayward teen who kind of made his way not in shelters, but really huffing and doing drugs and hustling.
At the same time, I mean, where I met Janice, we used to go do poetry at the New Eureka down the Lower East Side.
That was the way you found your identity, right? Because you're through poetry and
through writing.
And then one of the things that I loved about Janice the most was she wrote a story about her boyfriend's dick and how it walked across the street on its own balls, away from her.
Right.
And that's then I was like, this woman is a genius.
All right, there you go. Revo, were you also doing poetry, or you were just a poet enthusiast?
I was a poet.
You.
I don't do it a lot anymore. I still fuck around with it every so often, but
you are the Emily Dickinson of the Heritage Radio Network.
Yeah,
is that what I'm going to
I'd go there. I'd go
You've
there.
Been
Success
published.
Is counted sweetest.
Well, You've been in anthologies.
We were published together.
Oh,
we
had, in, can I get that versus, at the library?
Yes, Verses That Hurt.
Right. Verses That Hurt.
Yeah,
all right.
Yeah, it's, we were
this is all
together.
New to me. I mean, I'm learning about Janice.
Well, that's like when we had the pot guy. We had a guest. He was a pot cook, right? And I don't smoke pot, and Paul didn't smoke pot, and I have smoked pot, and Paul has smoked pot, but we're like, oh, Crazy Legs will smoke pot. He's the white dreadlock guy. He's like, no, guys, I don't smoke pot.
It was a real bummer of a show. Yeah,
nobody where was
smoked
I?
Pot.
See?
Well, we were discussing that before, and I mentioned Susan Sarandon, who is a pot enthusiast who smokes not while she's filming, but while she reads scripts. Have you found that marijuana can open up the writing process?
I have found that I can write both stoned and sober, which was a real relief.
Do you write stoned in cursive and then sober in block letters, or the other way around?
In legible cursive?
No, when I'm stoned, I write in graffiti. That's all I write.
I can write both ways, but there was a time when I really worried that if I quit smoking or if I just put down the joint for 10 minutes, even that somehow the creativity would be turned off. But fortunately, I can do both.
Okay. Which is good, because a lot of times we hear writers I admire who fall and prey to drinking. Drinking and writing going hand in hand. But I think in today's world, I listen to some Kevin Smith podcast, writing and pot smoking seems a little more in tune.
And I was at his place a couple of weeks back. We were in Red Bank, and we actually went to Kevin Smith's comic store.
Ah, yes, cool. I've been there. Secret Stash.
Yes,
sure.
Yes, and it was pretty amazing. It was pretty awesome. All right. Except for the fact that it was like, oh shit, there's a bunch of comic stuff and Kevin Smith paraphernalia.
All right. Well, yeah. So the poetry, the books, and also the one, the book that comes to mind. Nick Flynn wrote Another Bullshit Night in Suck City, which is about him volunteering.
I'm sorry. I hate that book. I've been trying to get through this book.
We've learned two things about you, one good and one bad.
It's on my damn freaking Amazon.
What don't you like about it? Now, for people who don't know, it's a memoir about a gentleman in Boston working at a homeless shelter while at the same time his father is homeless on the streets of Boston, but he's estranged from his father.
It's the prose. I'm just like, I'm trying to get through this thing. I have been trying to finish this book for 2 years.
The guy is also a poet, so maybe there's something in there. I met him. He was very nice. I went to a play reading.
There's some parts of it that I'm just like, okay, that was a good turn of phrase. Mm-hmm. That was awesome, whatever. But I'm just like, just get to the fucking point.
But that's the thing. I think because it's real life, the one thing I will say about the book is the ending kind of peters out because it's not the Hollywood movie with De Niro.
Right, yes.
The ending,
they made.
And it's not him in Provincetown building boats or just kind of living his life.
Right.
And the father sort of... It's not. I mean, it's not.
There's no resolution.
Yeah, he gets a bank card. You know,
honestly, and the same thing. The father in the book is such an aberrant human being that I'm just.
But there has to be compassion.
Look, I got a little ambiguity with my own dad and whatever.
All right.
And you know, he was a good guy. He wasn't freaking homeless, and he provided for us. But at the same time, it's like the thing about it is like this guy. Throughout that book, it just feels like he's jumping around the point.
Well, he's
like,
jumping
like,
because...
I just want him to go, fuck you, Dad. Fuck you.
But that's
fucking asshole. Fuck you, Dad.
But that's not his identity. I mean, I think...
I know.
Janice, did that book resonate with you, or how did you feel about it?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
So in all of the... In the world of memoirs, we've learned that maybe there are two types only, even though I read the Village Voice music... Chris DeGale. His broke down like four types of memoirs. But clearly, I think in modern New York memoirs, there's the type like yours, the type like Nick Flint's, and then there's the type like the woman who just wrote about the Upper East Side, who is now getting retractions in the book because she did something called telescoping. Is that a real term?
Telescoping, I didn't know about it.
This was her excuse. You can take events.
Uh-huh.
And timelines and things and move them around.
Yeah, it's called fiction.
But hers is supposed to be nonfiction. Hers was nonfiction.
Oh,
so they listed all these. So I think memoirs are divided. Maybe meaningful, poignant, going back to
the beats. Look, you know, Bukowski didn't use his own name. Kerouac didn't use his own name.
Chinansky's pretty close to Bukowski, but you knew it was him.
Burroughs didn't use his own name.
All right.
You know, I mean, and they were doing pretty much this thing that she's talking about. But I mean,
those published as nonfiction though? No,
they were published as prose or poetry.
Yeah, all right, fair enough. All right, so
you know, so I mean, how like all of a sudden. Like, you have to have a memoir? Look, I don't give a shit.
Everybody's got to have a memoir now.
Nah.
Janice, did you have any beats that influenced you from the female perspective? Because I know, I think I have some books I haven't read about female beat writers.
No, but I was lucky enough to take a class with Allen Ginsberg about 2 years before his death.
Nice.
And that was really incredible. Part of the thing about the poetry scene that we were in was everybody wanted to read it out loud, but nobody wanted to read other people's. Everybody wanted to share their poetry, but nobody wanted to read any. And so it wasn't a very intellectually rigorous type of community.
It was a lot of, like, you know, a lot of masturbating on stage, which I did a lot of.
Okay.
I mean, seriously.
So more performance art when you were doing
it. To some fucking level, yeah. I mean, really.
Unconscious.
I think when I met Janice, right? It was at some little bookstore. Mm-hmm. It was like a storefront, and basically, I came in with our co-host Paul, who's not here right now, right? And was like, "Fuck poetry, fuck y'all fucking suck, fuck you, fuck you, fuck you."
Oh.
I wrote it better than that.
Yeah,
right? Okay. But that was pretty much it.
You were the angry poet. You were,
I was the angry white boy.
You're with Sam Kinison in Back to School.
Yeah, pretty much.
Totally.
You guys are talking about a literary poetry reading. I can only relate it to 80s VHS movies. But yes, I get where you're from.
Dylan Thomas,
obviously.
Yeah, but then Janice opened her mouth.
Did not read poetry into that.
And she, I was like, That chick's pretty cool.
I've written the same poem, which was basically fuck poets, fuck poetry, fuck this bullshit.
All right.
So, yes, we were kindred spirits.
Any poets out there we should be keeping track of?
Gosh, I wish I could reel a bunch of them off.
I will give you one who is not a poet, but I felt her memoir, two memoirs, were written prose as poetry, is Angelica Huston. I think the two she wrote, A Story Lately Told and Memories of Me? No, that was a Billy Crystal movie. And the second one, I thought they were great. Everywhere she described,
those.
I wanted to travel to, her family history, in a very unpretentious...
Angelica Huston was on it.
Yeah, yeah. Yes, the actress. Yeah,
Judy's reading that book right now.
Oh, it's so good. It's so good. All right. Well, we are going to take a short break. Is that true, Rev?
Yes, we are. We're taking a break.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, Janice Elbaum will enlighten us with much more from the literary world on radio.
Cool.
Listening to Meeting at the Docks by RecTech. You're listening to Eating Disorder on HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
My name is Brandon Hoy, co-owner of Roberta's, a super duper awesome place. Roberta's is a very, 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 very proud sponsor of the Heritage Radio Network. We're also super awesome. Thank you, Heritage.
They are super awesome at Roberta's.
Yes,
the salad, which is normally unbelievable, they really stepped it up a notch. I don't know what's in it.
It's insane. I don't know what's in it.
I don't know.
Is it MSG or
I would hope. I would hope so.
Cocaine,
it's not a James Dolan.
It's the candied nuts.
Yeah.
Yes.
Candied nuts.
Candied nuts. On
little
that note,
candied nuts.
The Reverend calling for little candied nuts.
Well, I mean, it was.
We're back with eating disorder.
And it was Pride last.
Little candied nuts.
It was Pride yesterday. And by the way, I saw CeCe Peniston in Queens. Forget about that. Pride in Queens is the shit.
Wait, Gay Pride in Queens.
Gay Pride in Queens.
Our guest Janice Erlbaum had mentioned that earlier, off camera or off radio, Disney had a gay day as well, right? But they didn't acknowledge it.
Yeah, they have a gay day every year. I mean, it was started by Ted Gays themselves, but now Disney has oh great, you guys want to bring 5,000 people to the theme park? Fantastic!
Right.
Please
all
do
right.
By all means.
And what happens on Gay Day at Disney World or Land?
Well, the men are much more handsome than they are usually.
All right, yeah,
and in much better shape. Yeah. And the Country Bear Jamboree is full all day. It's pretty much how it goes.
I gotcha. Yeah.
Jug Ben Belly Felt. We fit right in. Oh my god,
we'd be perfect. Do you think there a Disney character that might like Dumbledore was gay in the Harry Potter world, and that kind of came out after the books?
Right,
is there a
right.
Disney equivalent?
I definitely think that. Pooh,
do you think? Winnie.
Yeah,
you know.
Winnie?
Winnie the Pooh and not Igor.
Very,
no,
very sensitive.
Who's the pigglet one? You think they're maybe like a platonic, like a Bert and Ernie type couple?
Oh, like a...
They
like,
seem very sensitive.
It's a very Greek kind of like... what's it called?
what do you mean? I didn't bring the
like Igor Aristotle kind of like...
Yeah,
you know?
No. They're the same age.
Piglet and the same age as Pooh? I'm sorry, where?
Yeah, Piglet and Pooh, they got to be the same age. No,
Piglet is the little one.
But just because he's smaller in size doesn't mean he's younger. Way to take it to a,
and more
a chicken. Chicken hot Nambla thing. We'll never get Triple Frown done by Disney now. Maybe right. maybe Goofy.
Goofy,
maybe bisexual
sure,
Goofy.
Sure, I'm
ABC apparently
to.
Is very gay friendly.
Yes,
so,
they are.
All right,
yes,
so Goofy, let's slate in Goofy for Triple Frown as perhaps bisexual.
You know, everybody shits on theme park food, and well, they might. But yes. Disney food, Janet Maslin, like 2 years ago, wrote an article like, oh, my, there's actually good food there. yeah. And it is one of the things that I like best
really?
About Disney
really?
Is the food.
Now, I had a discussion of, I was with two wonderful couples, the Oshtoffs from Iowa and the DeVikuses from Massachusetts. They both have 3 and 2 kids, respectively.
Mm-hmm. They're totally
listening. They do Disney shares, mm-hmm. and they were discussing this. And I said, I thought there was only one place, a secret bar called the 33, where
yes.
you could drink
oh.
at Disney. But they yeah. were saying maybe you can drink at other Disney areas.
Yes, you can.
Where
yes.
can you drink?
You can drink anywhere except the quote unquote Magic Kingdom.
Oh, is Tomorrowland in the Magic Kingdom?
Tomorrowland is.
Because after they spent $190 million, I bet you George Clooney can get a drink in there.
This is going to be. Oh, I can't wait to see where that freaking.
Right. But so all right, so you can
drink in Epcot. You can drink around the world.
Well, it's
world.
Educational.
Really?
You need a couple drinks to get that
you
history.
Can drink
down.
Around the
you
world.
You can drink
oh.
around the world. Oh. There's 11 countries.
Wow. Do they have at each country? Is it the appropriate? Like I like the German yeah. beer. Purity laws to be upheld if I'm at
really
if I'm
yes.
a, yeah
yeah
if it's a small world after all I want to get authentically drunk.
You can get authentically drunk in every country.
Do they have a Korea in the
they
small?
Do not they have a Japan
so no soju because that
no
would
soju.
Put you over the top
but you can
all
get
right.
some sake yes
sake yeah
okay.
All right.
They probably got some
margaritas
Greece,
in Mexico.
I mean,
no Greece, sorry.
Really?
Yeah.
The
Greece.
What the fuck, Disney?
All right, I'll tell you what. In Triple Frown, part of it will be we're building little Greek town
yeah.
in Disneyland. There's yeah. a big petition. Yeah, yeah. That's why the gays are coming out to build the Greek
little
town.
Little freaking Parthenon.
Something. A little Parthenon. Little feta cheese
you know, yeah,
at the
yeah,
Janet
yeah.
Maslin Review
you know,
places. All right, enough with that. Fictitious world. Let's talk about real fiction.
Okay.
You have a book, a real book.
Yes, I have a,
and
I have a
I didn't
real
mean
book.
Like a real book. Well, it's
yeah.
physically, you said you got it in the mail.
Yes,
something
finally.
You can hold. It's
yes.
not in the ether
yes,
or
right.
it's electronic.
Yes.
But all right.
No, this is regular old fashioned
and it is
print
I
copy.
Liar.
I Liar. Yeah. When I said that when I discovered my friend's deception, oh, I can write a book about it. That was the second memoir, but that was also this book. Because this time I wanted to be that person. I'd been the person who got screwed over by the psycho.
Ah, okay.
But this time I was like, let's do it from the psycho's point of view. And it was the
it was
most
like Evil Dead
fun.
It already sounds better than American Psycho. Yeah.
It was great, great
and
fun to write.
The character has Munchausen.
Munchausen
which of
syndrome.
Course I appear very intelligent now only because Janice told me what it was when I was like, oh man, I love those Terry Gilliam films, man. That Baron Munchausen is awesome. So Munchausen is either you said there were two kinds. I
yes,
like the way you worded
yes.
that. There was
there's Munchausen by proxy.
By proxy,
which everybody is pretty familiar with because
you poison,
your child.
Your child right. Like the Salt Lady. Or
right,
the,
right. Yeah. Actually, Stephen Hawking's nurse was being investigated.
Ooh, really?
For,
wow, really?
Yeah.
Did that make the movie I didn't see?
No, it didn't.
Was she feeding him just nitrous?
The
or,
children
you know?
The children were like, it's not, you know, something
really?
Bad is happening, mm-hmm. and she's doing it.
See, I would watch that movie.
B.B. King's.
Eddie Redmayne.
I mean, that
direct to DVD.
B.B.
Yeah.
King's. B.B. King's. King's manager was
which was yeah but they cleared that I think he
no,
had the autopsy
so he didn't
no nothing
him.
Doing but it's still
yeah.
weird I mean
yeah,
it's
weird.
All right and then there's you said there was old
yes,
school
original recipe
that's what you said yeah.
which is where you harm yourself or
okay.
cause disorders or fake disorders.
Is there someone in the
everybody
world
we used
that
to
we
hang
think
out with in the 90s
famous for that? Not in the tabloid world. I can't really think of anybody. I read the New York Post and I can't believe I can't think of anybody who would.
No, they're hard to
self-munchizing.
Yeah, they're hard to identify.
I had a couple of exes.
Self-munchizing yourself? I think that's probably not yeah. grammatically correct.
I wouldn't be surprised, man. These drama queens.
But and so the character, the lead character in
yes.
I, Liar,
yeah. Is a big liar.
And there's a comma between I and liar if you're looking for it at the library or preferably at the bookstore. Mm-hmm. And is it in stores yet?
It is not in stores yet.
But it's coming soon.
All
right. Yeah. Is there a release date?
The release date is soon.
Soon.
You know,
that's the best date to be released.
I did the first two books with Random House, which is a very traditional commercial publisher. And the thing about them is that if you hand in a manuscript tomorrow, your book will be published in 2017. Because it takes a long, long time. So this time I went
with
thought catalog books.
Because their presses are from the 1800s? It's just that's how it works in the book world.
Well, now having gone with this much quicker process and seeing that, like, you know, things happen and there are delays, it's like, oh, now I understand why they took a year and a half. But I really enjoyed working with Thought Catalog Books on this. They got it out really quickly.
Thought Catalog is awesome. Mm-hmm. I mean, I look them up. They're somewhere around the Upworthy side, but they're much more literate.
They wouldn't use the sentence where they're on the Upworthy side, but somewhat more literate.
Yeah, but they're also much less clickbaity in regards to their own. Yeah,
are these all book terms?
No, Upworthy and Mother Jones are just like horrible.
I thought you meant like Upworthy, like an adjective.
No,
man,
right,
I'm out of
Upworthy.
It.
Oh, all right. Catalog is
Janice,
where
should people look to find out about the book or to buy the book?
Girlbomb.com.
All right, that is your site.
That is my own site.
Excellent.
That was the title of the first book, or Amazon.com. Look it right up.
So we only have a few minutes, but we want to bring it back to food. Food foibles. What do you hate?
What do I hate? You were talking about veganism in a derogatory way. I kind of feel like I would love to be vegan if it didn't seem like it took your entire life up. It does seem like you have to spend your whole life on being vegan, right?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, okay, it's easier now.
That's one of the things I have been learning.
It's easier now. It is, because there's a lot of sites and a lot of books and blah, blah, blah. My problem with veganism is the fact that it becomes this righteous asshole fucking commodity where you're like, oh, well, I'm vegan, therefore you suck. Like, no, go fuck yourself.
You should do it the way I do it, Rev, which is I'm so poor that I found a two-pound bag of quinoa in the back. I added, like, cucumbers, tomatoes, and it somehow, even without adding cheese, by day four, there was some liquid runoff, so I bought some burrito wrappers, and I wrapped it. I made, like, a quinrito, I guess it would be. It was not good. It wasn't good.
No.
It might have been because it was 5 days in. And,
maybe so.
But at the same time, I was like, hey, this is vegan, man. I'm eating a quinrito.
Yeah.
If Taco Bell wants to steal that, go ahead.
No, anytime you leave the city, really, anytime I travel, like, right. Poetry. Yeah. I did a poetry tour.
Right.
There's not a green vegetable anywhere to be found.
We had a show about the food deserts.
Yeah,
food
deserts. The whole middle is like a big old desert. Yep. There's nothing to eat.
Yeah, and part of the problem, especially if you're an entertainer, if you're a writer, if you have to tour, when it comes down to like airport food, and you've had experiences, you've had.
Well, I'm lucky because I don't generally eat in airports. So I'm heading.
No, but you eat at strip clubs is what happens.
But yes, afterwards at 5 a.m., I find the place that serves the best 9 kinds of chicken wings. Charlotte, you got to go to Charlotte if you want good peeler joint strip club food after 3 a.m.
Yeah,
but Janice, I have a question. Now, is there anything your life partner eats that annoys you? And if we can say who, perhaps, your life partner is.
Yes, he was last week's guest.
He
Bill
was Bill Scurry, right?
Bookends.
Boom, look at that.
So, my wonderful husband.
So now that he can't retort, except through social media, anything that he, does he eat like durian tacos? Does he eat any, is there anything you eat?
Anchovies.
No. I'm anchovies. Right. He hates anchovies.
All right.
The kimchi in the fridge can sometimes get a little bit gamey.
Right.
But really with Bill, who I love and adore vastly, he and I are very bad influences on each other.
That's the best kind of
when
relationship there is.
When it comes to eating poorly, he said to me like 3 weeks ago, he said, I'm in the mood for cake. And I was like, okay, great. You know, we should get some cake
for dinner.
Yeah. And he said, no, I'm in the mood for a cake.
Oh.
And I was like, all right.
Yeah.
All right.
Cakes
calm
are,
in.
Cakes are smaller these days. You could definitely, if you're going halvesies on a cake, like What cake place did you choose?
No, we got Empire Cakes in Chelsea. Right. We got the full 12-inch diameter cake.
Right. Regulation
and,
size.
Red velvet. Ate it over the course of a weekend. Yeah.
Both of you like the red velvet flavor?
We did. Okay. We both
I like it.
I mean, have you had, really have do you realize had, that we both got half a wood while you were saying that.
Like, way to make it sexual. do you know Cake Man Raven?
No.
You got he's got the best. He uses beets, too. He uses real, speaking of responsible coloring. Cake Man Raven does two cakes, coconut, vanilla, and red velvet. He sells them in slices. I don't even think that legally he's allowed to sell the whole cake to you. But I've never made it. I've always bought a slice. I've bought a slice for somebody else to take on the train, and I've never made it to that person. No. I just show up with a beard full of frosting. Yeah. And they're like,
it's cake. It's a cake. It just dissolves when you eat it and stuff it in your face.
So your cake was probably about a pound and a half. Would you like to take a guess at how much cake Matt Megatoad Stoney ate in the World Cake Eating Championship sponsored by Whole Foods Cake somewhere at a mall in Florida whose name I should remember?
I'm going to say
in poundage or in cakes.
Seven cakes worth.
Holy cow, you're really good.
Yeah?
Seven and a
ding,
half.
Ding, ding, ding,
all right.
I'll give it to you.
Ding,
within a half a cake.
Awesome.
You did. That's 14.5 pounds of cake.
If only there was an OTB in New York City, I could have made some money off
that. So you're
that
saying work the cake eating into Triple Frown then?
Yes. Yes.
Do you think Schwimmer or Stephen Baldwin will eat cake?
Well, you know, the thing is that anytime there's a cake in a movie.
Ben Stiller is like less aberrant to me than freaking Schwimmer.
Oh, never mind. Stiller, he would want to direct. I want the Coen brothers to direct.
The cake rule is that if there's a cake, somebody's going to fall in it. Nobody is ever going to eat the damn cake. Anytime you see a nice cake, nobody's just going to slice a piece up.
It's the gun of PG movies.
Okay, at your wedding,
yes.
Did you do the cake in the face?
No, we did not
do
the cake in the face.
Awesome, good.
Yeah, yeah.
Because that's really douchey.
Too much respect for cake.
It's just douchey.
Exactly,
it is.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, all right, Janice, we know people can reach you at girlbomb.com.
Yep.
And the book, I Liar, pick it up at the bookstore. I'll get it from the library, but I'll keep plugging it at the bookstore.
Can you get it on Amazon, too?
Yes, you can.
Amazon.
And is it an e-book?
Yes, you can get it as an e-book.
Awesome.
It's
Kindle.
$6 for an e-book.
Wow.
So I know,
$6.
Right?
What a bargain.
Who knew they could make, it's like Fitzcarraldo. Who knew they could make those e-books in the Amazon jungle that cheap?
That's right.
anything else you'd like to add?
Thanks for having me. This
is delicious. This was thrilling.
Thanks
have
for being
had,
have.
I don't know if we've had any wonderful literary authors on. My mind is a blank.
It's been a second.
I think I'll just insult all the previous guests, but this was wonderful. So, Chancellor Obama, thank you for joining Eating Disorder. And thank you, as always, to Liz, our engineer,
Liz.
Who does it all for us. She's our MVP, our most valuable
Liz, we got leftovers, by the way.
Engineer. And Heritage Radio and Roberta's. And we got two guests lined up already. We're organized. Yep. Hogan Gorman, comedian, next
she's
week.
She's the sexy cripple.
Yes, hot cripple. She is sexy, but she's the hot cripple. And then Brian Wetzel, editor extraordinaire, the following week, talking about trailers, talking about movies.
Yes.
He edited a very strange short film called Tiddlywink, directed by one of the co-hosts here. So, anyway, we got lots coming up.
And
check us out at heritageradionetwork.org. For Eating Disorder, I'm Crazy Legs Conti.
I'm the Rev Spiro.
And we'll see you next week.
Good night.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.